security. Backstabbing is like breathing when in poverty. I try to make my sanity with the insane. Got a secondary to most when they scrap for money. But then again, money can cause even more death. When an African turns bigger, step and fetch it all. I just say when price is right, you can buy us all. Well, not me, cause I don't truly give a care about me. I move in poverty and wealth, but I surely move. And syncopated with your beat or your whack ass groove. My break beat is to break away from your thing. All these things you put on me makes this brother sing. I need some time to ease my mind.
Hey, yo, Kevin, Mr.
Hey,
Howcutt.
Hey.
Yo, Season of the Witch, man.
Oh, yeah, right?
That opened my eyes to how obvious, I mean, like, everybody talks about how...
What, Nicolas Cage?
No.
Another Season of the Witch? Donovan?
No, I'm talking about Donovan, yeah. It's a Season of the Witch, how the occult saved rock and roll by Peter...
Oh, right.
Yeah, Baruba Jaggle. No, Bieber Gaw. He opened my eyes to like how obvious it is that rock and roll relies on the occult. And
that
how
was
many
a great episode of 42 Minutes, man.
Oh well, I appreciate it, but it was a great book. Like the cool thing about 42 Minutes is if you do the research, then the person you're interviewing will make it a good show. So, I mean, Doug, thank Doug for it being a great show. But the whole thing is that makes it plain and vivid that, I mean, he calls it in that book, he calls it the occult imagination. But that, I mean, that's the breakdown as far as conspiracy theory goes. People see occult and they're like, up, conspiracy.
Right.
But there's more to it than that.
Totally.
Like the occult creates, it's a creation thing. It's like a creative inspiration instead of locked down in belief. I mean,
right. Well, there's right and left brain, right? So that's the thing, is that your left brain is very easily, you know, accessible. It's worked more than the right brain is generally, but it didn't used to be that way, apparently. I mean, and when you look at the way language developed, it seems like the right brain was way more dominant, actually. From the beginning, and that we've kind of emphasized another side of things, but like that's the thing about a cult is that like there's a different kind of way of relating and understanding. You know, I was just watching Scott Onstott talking about that whole idea again and emphasizing that with his particular findings. You know, he's like, your left brain will have a strong reaction to this, but that's beside the point. The point is that this connection actually exists, and what you take from it on top of that is another matter, you know.
I often consider the whole Kabbalah red, the right pillar, left pillar as like right brain, left brain. Do you see it the same way?
I see it as crossing over from when you look at the supernal into the terrestrial, that it's literally flips. And so you'll have the masculine, the feminine, the masculine. Not to say that it's just there's a changing of the guards energetically. It's still the same principles that are at play, but they do a thing. At least that's what's communicated when you're looking at how from Chokhmah to Bina the template is distributed, and then in the flow there's kind of a reversal that seems to be acknowledged, at least what I've seen in commentary.
That's
so
how
far.
Like eyes and motor function works too, right?
Right. Well, that's the thing that I find really interesting in that regard. Yeah. I mean, I don't. That connection is kind of a conjecture connection to just say, well, this is. But the thing is that Keter literally, they say, I come across this a lot, where it directly translates as medial brain. What they're saying about Keter, they're like, what is this? And it's like, oh, medial brain, the center of the brain, and that's the crown. Like that implies that Chokhmah and Bina are the right and left sides of the brain. And then when you say that, and that flip occurs, it just seems like there is some understanding of that principle, which is really far out.
Yeah, there's also the I think there's a Crowley quote where he talks about how there's like a certain sublimity to the structure of the tree of life, because like contradiction is like part of one of the principles of like nature above the abyss, you know. So like above Hesed, you know, the abyss of the space between the human and the supernal realms, you know. So if you think about, you know, Hokma and Bina being kind of these reversed functions of the right and left brain because they're above the abyss, you know? Mm-hmm. There's like kind of an interesting connection there too between the contradiction and the right and left sides being kind of like active and passive, and then that being the opposite in terms of what the left and right brain are generally attributed to, you know? Because I guess, you know, technically the right brain, if you are the tree of life, that would put Bina, you know, at your right side, you know. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't quite make sense, but contradiction rules above the abyss. So then that switch would make more sense, you know.
Yeah, the contra is only in the diction, right? The diction is contrary, but the thing in itself isn't necessarily.
Right.
I was reading something, I think it was a footnote. I think I was reading Prometheus Rising. And in a footnote, he's like, one of his exercises, Robert Anton Wilson's exercises, is try to write with your, if you're left-handed, try to write with your right. And if you're right, try to draw with your left. And he says, the footnote was, I guess Crowley would advise his students to do that, to try to stimulate that other side of the brain that is inactive, because most people are usually right-handed.
Sure, I think it's in.
Yeah, and I don't know if that had been played with before him, but it's just an interesting psychological trick to sort of shift yourself into a new headspace.
Da Vinci
did that too. Oh, okay.
Yep. Well, Da Vinci didn't want to smear his writing, right? That's what they say. So he was writing with ink, and he didn't want.
Right.
He was one, so he like would go in the opposite direction just so he wouldn't wipe his hand across it.
Right, and they teach you that in art class and whatever, to put a piece of paper, like, to, because you, if you're inking like a comic book, you want to go from top left to bottom right if you're right-handed, because otherwise your hand would cross the ink and smear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But also, like, hermetic writing is writing with both hands.
Hmm.
Exactly, which is what I find really interesting about, like, when you look at the difference between, if you're reading, like, I read Torah in Hebrew, you know, and we're going along, and you're going from right to left, and then if you were to read that in English, you're going from left to right. What does that say in terms of the brain, you know? It's kind of funny, because one, ideally, you know, you'd be looking at as a pictograph, which is a right brain activity to understand beyond the image, like you're relating to an image. But then if you look at the mathematics as well, so you, if you're reading something and you're looking at musical notes, so it's all being sung. So if you're doing all of that simultaneously, like you're actually reading and using both parts of your brain as well as being rhythmic and rocking to it musically, like that, you know, all those factors combined is just really interesting. And then to remove all of that and then read it from left to right is kind of interesting.
That's why I love comic books, because comic books fire both sides of the brain too, because you're dealing with the spatial relationship with the pictorial aspect of it.
And absolutely, then you're dealing, dude.
Right, exactly.
Alan Moore, that was his huge argument why he didn't want to see his films represented that, you know. Although because you can't do that with film. I mean, people can access that. That seems to me to be.
I try to do that with film because I usually turn on the subtitles. My girls can't stand it, but to me, it brings like it. You'll understand more about what the film is relating if you're watching the movement of the right brain spatial kind of relationship of the blob. I mean, I call it the blob. It's just whatever the picture is showing you. You can automatically pick up, and your brain's relating and communicating with you in that way. But if you're also reading the words, then your left brain's going as well.
Totally.
Well, and yeah. I like thinking. Oh, go ahead, Alan. No, it's nothing. I insist.
Mine's not much. I mean, basically, what I wanted to say is, so I'm working this job at the Hilton, and there's a every day I pull into the parking lot, and there's somebody with the license plate Mad Mem, M-E-M, right? So.
Wow.
I'm fascinated by it. Like every day I go in and I'm like, well, so, and there's, so it's also a customized plate in that it's like, it has like a picture of like like a wave or something, and it's something about like Virginia coastal waters or something. So it's like the mem, the waters, but then it's Mad Men, Mad Mem, all this sort of like that. I'm like, what the fuck, right? But I, when you guys were showing, so like, I'm thinking, right, our eyes take in a foot image, right? And then our brain flips it back. So it's sort of like the, it's a series of filters. But to be the hanged man, like Kevin, you said, to be above the abyss, right? I'm also thinking of the hanged man hanging over the abyss. He has been flipped. And David, you're saying once you cross that, you have a flip happening on either side, right?
Right, but so do you realize how applicable that is in terms of when you lay out the hero's journey using the 22 arcana? We have your 11-11, you know, on both sides. The hangman is the first to be flipped. When you go from lust to the hangman, he's the first one that's upside down. So you're looking
right,
at the reflection.
Right, so I guess I'm saying to have, you know, I always think of the archetypes as like, essentially like, for lack of a better term, like states of consciousness. Like they're like toolkits, reality tunnels. Like there's a time and a place for me to utilize the chariot knowledge, you know, but there's gonna be another time where it's like, for me, it's not like a progression even in that cycle. It's like there might be a day where today I need some hanged man, but maybe next week I need some lust, the week after it's not necessarily in order, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm saying is, and that's just my that's my relationship to it, or my sort of, you know, the sort of language that I've chosen, or that it resonates with me for these states of consciousness, these sort of tools. Anyway, to me, the hanged man is like, it's the glimpse before the brain has reprocessed. And I guess what I'm asking, is it in a sense, it's a more purer vision, right? It's a truly seeing with the eyes before the brain kicks in to work it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Well, also I've tended to relate to the hangman as you have a conscious mind and you have the unconscious mind, and that the two are actually mutually interdependent and they're influencing each other. That's what I'm looking at, that reversal of the major arcana where you have the 22 cards and they loop back, and so you have 11 on one side and 11 on the other. I see that as a relationship between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. That's just the way it seems to make the most sense, but I'm open to other ideas.
Well, I don't know if there's a
go
ahead, Kevin.
I think it's interesting too, like something that comes up in my work, studying all these kind of membrane themes, you know, is this, as we talked about in like other chats, like this idea of the spiritual plane being or the imaginative plane being this kind of the causal plane, you know, and the physical realm being the crystallization of that plane of existence in a sense. So when you think of like water and like all these mirror themes, you know, like water reflects, and like the hanged man is the water tarot trump in the tarot deck, and it represents that quality of surrender, you know.
Right.
So that inversion quality always to be like speaks that kind of two worlds consciousness, you know, that it's like it's part of the duality consciousness inherent to like being being human beings in Earth, on Earth and stuff. But I think like the symbolisms of these mirrors, the upside down, the inverse, and all of this is like a reflection of that psychic reality, you know, that that we exist above and below that abyss, you know.
Yeah, well, isn't that why it's the Thoth deck in the first place? Is because it's the Ibis looking at its own reflection, like you see in the Queen of Cups, and you know that whole idea. Because what is the conscious mind looking into the subconscious? It can't actually see the subconscious. It can only represent it from an analytical perspective. Yet a dream is a dream. So if you fall asleep and you go into it, that's its own deal. and you can be lucid, you can control it too. But that's, you know, that's the work that you see, you know, that's one of the main focuses in Thelema, as far as I can tell, is being able to direct the unconscious in ways that aren't necessarily thought to be possible.
I like this whole connection between Mad Mim. If you think of mad as being like insane or crazy, right? Where it's like, and the traditional, okay, so mim basically means memory, right? So memory is the opposite of insane. It's the categorization of like what is happening, the truth, and being coherent and remembering. And mad is the exact opposite. Do you get what I mean? So. Yeah, yeah.
You're incorrectly remembering. Is that what you mean? Like,
right? It's the opposite of
it's
the
how
memory.
The faulty memory logic system.
Well, you think of insanity as like false history. Like, if you think about people rewriting a revisionist or
isn't the definition of insanity doing the same thing over and expecting a different result? So that, like, as if you didn't remember, it's like almost like amnesia. You forgot that this action has this result.
Right. And then that leads us kind of parks us right up close to like Philip K. Dick. Do you know what I mean? Or the opposite of amnesia, remembering total recall. Bam. I also like the fact that I'm looking at this thing that you put in here, the mad lover, where it's just the word mim and mad over and over and over, and my eye fell on the word the devil.
Well, it's mem and chi, right? Which, what is chi? Chi is the energetic flow. So, but it, so I scroll up and it's a play, and it's the character Memnon and Chillax are talking to each other. Now, this is really old, so I think it's hilarious.
Really Chillax.
Chillax.
It's better than Chillactate.
Enter Chillax.
Water chills, you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, it's like
frozen.
It says, "Thou must needs die, good Chillax. Very well, sir. I have honest, valiant souls about me. I cannot miss thee. Die, D-Y-E. Yes, die, D-I-E. Die, sir, aye, and ye shall die. Good Chillax, the mad lover." Yeah, I don't know what the fuck this is, but it's interesting.
But you know,
it's just weird. It's like I'm going through this whole devil, like, somebody made the point where the devil's horns connect to the goat and the year of the goat, but there's devil stuff happening like all up and down one wall and the other, and then. Like I'm scrolling up your little thing here that you have, and my eyes fall on the words "the devil," and all of a sudden I got like this download in a very Philip K. Dickian way, where it's like the words fucking released some recall in my brain.
You know, the Hebrew letter mem, which means water, is similar to samek, except it's more square, you know, but it's actually a loop that goes all the way back around. So it's interesting. You could relate to that a few different ways, but isn't it?
Wait. You said that the letter mem is a loop.
Loop. It goes back around to itself. So it's like an Ouroboros symbol.
Valus loop.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a
total recall.
Yeah, it goes around, and so there's a significance in the letters when they relate to those. You know, I mean, there's a whole thing around that. Like tet doesn't connect. You know, samek does. So it's like the next stage. And you'll see this represented in the rider deck by the reptilians that show up, because you have it getting closer to an Ouroboros. That's why the King of Wands, you can see that, like, finally you actually have the Ouroboros and the lizard at his side. So he's the lizard king. I'm like almost, you know, 95% sure that that's what the joke was with the lizard king. It's a direct reference to the King of Wands in the Rider tarot deck. But the thing is, I was going to say about fucking Heath Ledger, is that isn't it interesting that when they pull the card of the hangman, which is mem, he's actually over water in that scene. With his airway open, you know, later on his airway gets blocked.
Who kept
and you have
saying
Olive. Pen?
Pen? Was someone saying pen?
When?
Jim Carrey?
Sean Penn? Jim Carrey. earlier, I was talking about Jim Carrey with the red and blue, where he's like got a pen. He's like, this pen is, and he can't tell a lie. So he's trying to say it's red, but it's blue.
Blue.
He can't change it.
Right.
Sorry, because I was thinking. Sorry, I was thinking of Heath Ledger is like Ledger is the book.
Yeah.
Mm.
Or the ledge that you drop off.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, he was hanging from a ledge in the Dr. Parnassus, you know. But yeah, no, it's strange. And then it's also very strange that at the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey, not the very end, but, you know, going down with when he's in the, you know, pod and he's saying, Hal, open the pod bay doors, and it says Mem behind him. And I had an experience a number of years ago where I took a bunch of acid and I was like, okay, I'm going to record the soundtrack to 2001, A Space Odyssey. You know, and I went and it was a birthday party and I recorded my set with my mini disc player. But it was all vinyl in my 303. And, you know, in the morning when I washed it to get together, you know, like as the sun was rising, you know, after that night, it was this whole like crazy personal religious experience or whatever. But afterwards, I wrote Mem on the CD the first time that I was like, oh, what do I call this mix? And I just wrote Mem. But it's interesting. I didn't really think about the significance of that at the time. But if you watch, you know, 2001, the Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite with Pink Floyd Echoes, you know, you have this whole submarine theme. Originally, if you look at the first lyrics of Echoes, they're all about outer space and planetary alignments. When they performed it live the first few times, that was what the song was about. And then they made it into this sea metaphor. And so you have the whole Julia thing ties in like crazy, you know, Ocean's Child related to Jupiter. Julia literally means Jupiter's child. And so isn't it funny that the song by the Beatles says fucking Ocean's Child and making that equation when you have 2001 A Space Odyssey apparently did the exact same thing with Pink Floyd. You know, they have those whale sounds and all of that shit. You know, it's very underwater-esque, you know, like a submarine. Everything's, you know, they relate to the spaceship as a submarine. So like as above, so below, I guess, would be the significance or something, but.
Hey, David, what I'm reading here, does this resonate with what you've learned? It says, there are two forms of the letter mem, one used at the beginning or middle of words, open, and one only used to end a word, closed.
Yeah.
Jewish tradition regarding these letters indicates that the open mem is a womb,
yes,
open so that life can come forth,
yeah,
and the closed mem is a closed womb or a tomb, a place where there is no life.
Yeah, sure. I've heard that before. Where are you reading that?
Fucking Valis loop. Jesus.
Well, it's not
Christ.
Just a Valis loop, but you know when you were Will, you were saying about the caterpillar has to die to become a butterfly. You know this idea of the transformation.
Holy shit.
It's the hangman's noose. And you know what? So you guys, I just watched a fucking Knight's Tale, and I brought myself to watch it. It was actually very enjoyable, especially for sync purposes. But there's this whole scene at the beginning where I'm just like, give me a fucking break, where they're standing at the gallows, and Heath Ledger is there all talking, and like, everything is just so ridiculously applicable. And I watched The Brothers Grimm, too, and he fucking pulls out a fucking death card, the Ace of Spades. Heath Ledger sticks it on his forehead. You know, he's got the fucking risen symbol of Osiris on his forehead and Dr. Parnassus. Sticks it on his forehead, makes this whole statement about dying if he's not being honest or something like that. I can't remember. I'd have to watch it again. But he talks about his own death, sticks it on his forehead, and he's pointing to it. And it's just like, you know, and you know what that movie is about? It's about fucking fake magic. Heath Ledger is a fake magician who's basically doing like this kind of like seance thing where they're killing witches or whatever, but it's not real. And then they come upon real magic and have to realize, oh, wait a minute, this is actually fucking real, you know?
You know, it's the second time that A Knight's Tale has been mentioned in this little conversation of ours because Brian Hegelin wrote it.
No shit.
Yeah.
Well, that's saying something weird. Because it's the fucking hangman loop, too. You know, you could take it. You're looking at a loop. Mem. That's fucking weird.
You yes, got more. You know, hold on. I got something stirring here. I'm looking something up.
Oh, well, this was the thing, too. Is that the fucking... So Batman always associated with a vampire. You have this whole thing with Shin is fire. Mem is water. Olive is air. And those are the different parts of the Tree of Life, and there's this whole thing around that. It's you know, gets rather complicated. But, you know, shin literally means canine tooth. It's a fang. And isn't it funny to that, like, you know, Robert Anton Wilson, when he watched Batman shortly before, you know, he passed, he watched Tim Burton's Batman, was like, this is totally the symbol. It's like vampire teeth. And he was like, could anyone notice this whole vampire theme throughout this movie? And vampires obviously comes from Dracula, which is Draco, which is, you know, a play on Christianity where you drink someone's blood to live forever. Drink of my blood, even my flesh, you know, this whole thing. And so, yeah, I don't know if you guys get the idea of kind of where I'm going with that, but it's pretty trippy.
In Burton's Batman, they also say that he, like, drinks the blood or whatever. But here, let me read this to you. This is coming from the Dictionary of Symbols by J.E. Surlot. It was just some sinky book that fell into my hands.
Did you see where he said he drinks blood?
At the very beginning, they're talking about Batman. They're sitting on top of the roof. I'm, like, staring upward because I'm doing this from memory. But the very beginning, they're like, it's the bat, man. It's the bat. Like, oh, what they said is he can't – somebody was thrown off of a roof and there was no blood in the body.
Right, and they say he can't be killed. Right. So it's got this whole thing going on, Jesus vampire shit. But then if you look at the very next scenes when they're down below, you know, and there's, like, a meat store, and it's all Hebrew written all over the walls for kosher meat, you know, and it just so happens that, like, at the beginning of that movie, after they say that, they show you all this Hebrew. It felt like a weird psychedelic clue to me. I don't know. I was tripping out on it. But because the Hebrew letter shin, which is judgment, so you have the people rising from the graves, you know, that's the card associated with it. And those are dead people. That's a fucking, they're vampires, dude. You look at it, they're coming out of coffins right. In the writer deck. You know what I'm saying? With Michael blowing the fucking trumpet.
This okay, a Dictionary of Symbols by J.E. Surlot. Okay, this is Sleeping Beauty. It's just a dictionary, basically. This is the entry. On the one hand, she may be regarded as a symbol of the anima in the Jungian sense. On the other, she symbolizes, rather than the unconscious proper, the ancestral images which lie dormant in the unconscious, waiting to be stimulated into action. As Loeffer points out, in fairy tales, the legend princesses lie dreaming in their palaces, like memories and intuitions, deep down in our unconscious. The princesses in their palaces, though not always asleep, are invariable outside the world of action, so that every sleeping or otherwise secluded princess stands for a passive potential. And in here lies the secret to Jennifer Connelly, in my opinion. Especially the movie Dark City. Is that what it's called? Isn't it? It's Dark City. Oh, well, first off, A Knight's Tale came out in 2001. I just saw that.
Dark City
but
was like 99 or 97, right?
Right. Dark City is 1999. I think it was Dark City is almost the exact same movie as The Matrix, and they both came out in the same year.
It has interesting crossover for sure. It's definitely got like the Archon theme. Those things that are they look like vampires, but they're Archons that secretly rule people and replace their memories with shit.
They're sucking.
If you remember that they're sucking the memory though, and then they are scared of water. At the very end of the movie, once the guy's false memories are injected by Kiefer Sutherland from Flatliners,
they are afraid of water. You're right.
Yeah. Sure. So I mean, at the very end of it, the
memory injections. But right. Even okay. So look, I haven't seen
Holy
Night's
water.
Tale.
The I've water seen... comes. Well, the water's Perfect. Flooded.
I've never
in.
Seen Night's Tale, but. It says here the storyline. I'm reading IMDb when there's a fuckload of interesting stuff. So Brian
it
Heck
starts
didn't
out
just...
with a dead knight and Heath no, Ledger actually... takes his place.
But okay, I'm just going to say three really quick factoids. One, it's 2000. The movie came out in 2001. Two, it wasn't just written by Brian Hegeland. He wrote and he directed and produced and wrote the movie.
Yep.
So this was his baby. Okay. What was I going to say? The idea of – so the storyline here says that he's he has someone write a fake history for him, right? He does – he's not actually a knight, so he has someone write a fake memory – fake
yeah,
history
a
for him.
Notarizer,
it's,
yeah.
And basically it's the same thing as Dark City, where they inject the false memories that he wakes up.
Cool.
Same thing. He's saying, if you convince yourself that you're actually this bold person, then you can do it. Because you remember the guy from 24, Kiefer Sutherland, was not
Smotherland, I believe.
But he injected the false memory to make him able, just like this guy has the false history to make him at night.
Who's the fucking vampire in The Lost Boys?
Right. Lastly, it says here, crazy credits. As the first credits appear, the camera swings to show a constellation behind William and Jocelyn. The constellation is Orion, the Hunter. Jocelyn refers to William as the Hunter before she learns his name. So here we have him directly correlated with Orion in the movie.
And where does Jocelyn and whatever from? That's from...
This is all Night's Tale. I don't know. It's a girl's
name. Yeah, I remember. Okay. Yeah. It's weird because Hegelin has this pattern. I mean, he did Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson. Then he did Payback with Mel Gibson. He did A Night's Tale with Ledger. Then he did The Order with Ledger. He did Man on Fire with Denzel. And then The Taking of Pelham 123 with Denzel, too. But The Order, have you guys seen The Order? I haven't watched it all the way through. All I know is I saw like a tidbit of it,
and I was like, what the hell is this? Yeah, I wasn't feeling it when I first came out, but I should revisit it for sync purposes. That's a nerd movie to watch, dude.
Here's a sync purposes. I'm going to take Mrs. Doubtfire and Man on Fire and put the two movies on at the same time.
Hey, fuck it. Man on Fire and Doubtfire. You know, I don't doubt that that'll work. You know,
this is Man on Fire. Wow. Don't doubt it.
So. Well, if you wanted to incorporate into the Dark Knight Rising, you know, that was like, it's funny. Jason and I independently had the same thought when it was like Batman, the newest Batman came out, you know, and it was like Dark Knight Rises or whatever. And immediately I was like, fucking Knight of Wands, dude. Like, between the decon, I guess, was like so many degrees between Scorpio and Sagittarius, and he's all rising out, you know, and it's supposed to be like lizard scales on him, they say, you know. So that was pretty trippy, but you could, you know, incorporate the Knight's Tale, you know, the Dark Knight Rises and Mrs. Doubtfire and Man on Fire and just watch them all at the same time. Fuck it.
Can anyone tell me, besides the obvious, like, stone that the builders rejected, all this sort of stuff, why the tagline for A Knight's Tale is "He will rock you"?
Right. Because they play
because
it.
Because the whole
it's Queen.
Yeah,
so there
Queen,
you go.
The whole Knight's Tale is infected with Queen.
Right.
Like they use it. Yeah, well, no. Like, okay, so they're about ready to joust, and the whole freaking crowd is going. Do you know what
I mean?
Did you slap your stomach just now? Was that you slapping on your stomach?
No.
I'm serious. I just want to know.
That'd be awesome, though. Man, I should have.
It's fucking Queen. And so you're like, the stone will rock you, the stone that the builders rejected, Queen. The Queen is the stone. You know what I'm saying? She's the only. She can move in any direction. No one else on the chessboard can do that, you know?
Well, he's the Order, too, and they use the same girl. But Heath Ledger's love interest is Heath Ledger's love interest, and the Order is the same one as in Knight's Tale.
Really? No shit. Wow, that's trippy.
Well, I mean, it's the same writer, same director. So.
But still, man, symbolically, that's a significant one.
Sync-wise, that's just right up your alley.
That's what I'm saying, man. Shit.
Treading through some shit tonight, boys.
So what was the Robin Hood thing? No one remembers how Robin Hood equals 42? Is it straight Gamashia?
Fuck, man. That had to come from the sinkhole, and 42 equals everything from watermelons to wood grain. So...
You know that every U.S. president except for two is related to John? Guy at the time of Robin Hood that, like, you know, what's his name, that asshole who was like watching over his kingdom or whatever, something else,
the sheriff,
not Ma- Yeah, the sheriff of
Nottingham.
Fucking, not Mad Mardigan. No,
sheriff of Nottingham.
Yeah, but he had a name. I can't remember. Not the point. Anyways, that guy, the fucking king at the time, was off with the Crusades. That guy, every U.S. president except for two, is blood related to him.
I think it was Richard, but maybe not.
No, that was King John.
No, King John was Richard Lewis.
Prince John.
And then King Richard came back, who was Jean-Luc Picard.
Oh, right. You're right. I stand corrected.
I finally win. Okay. I win you something.
Win. The Return of the Dick.
Return of the Dick. What was the other wrestler's name? Because it was Don Draper and Dick what? Madman. Or I guess you guys.
No, Don Draper, Dick Whitman.
Whitman, thank you. Whatever. I don't know what the significance of that was. I'm just trying to remember. We're all mad here. That's the thing. That movie as a whole, there's layers to shit where you don't know what you're watching is even fucking real, where it ends up going. Like, it's got a very Alice in Wonderland bent to it. And that's the thing. The fucking queen chops off everyone's heads. It's a real problem.
It is a real problem.
Because she's not the queen, man. Who let this woman run the show over here? Fucked up. I don't know, man.
Oh.
I got a copy of Alice in Wonderland. It's like the one that's like drawn by him or whatever. And like some of the differences are totally noteworthy. I don't know if you guys have ever read that. Like Alice's Adventures Underground, like the first fucking copy.
Yeah, I know. There's, you can find PDFs of it online.
Have you guys seen this movie Time Walker? It's a bad B movie with a mummy.
It's been coming up a lot lately in the...
I was just watching with Alex Fulton the other day, and it was like a part of a double feature that we watched, and it was just so fucking weird. It was confusing as hell at first, because you don't know what the villain is. It's either a mummy or a mold or something. You don't know what the hell's going on. Anyway, someone steals this mummy's fucking diamonds, and someone shoots it with gamma rays. So of course it comes to life, and it wants its diamonds back. So it's this undead person arising or whatever, seeking these jewels. And every time he gets a jewel, he puts it on this like Enochian tablet that's kind of like a tree of life with notches in it. And he puts each of his little Sephiroth in there. I don't think it's 10 or anything, but, it's just aesthetically similar in what it's trying to accomplish. Anyway, the mummy causes a bunch of destruction on his way towards self-ascension, murdering a couple of people. But it turned out the mummy's not bad, really. He just wanted his jewels to ascend. Because at the end, after he gets them all, he gets, like, zapped, and he turns into a fucking blue alien. And he takes, like, the main character with him. It's just really trippy.
Had the jewels been in his family for, like, a really long time?
I mean, they're in a hidden compartment of the coffin, so one can only imagine a long time, and was very possessive of them. Although, if he didn't hit it with gamma rays, it wouldn't have come to life in the first place. Or maybe it would have. That's so fucking confusing. Was it an alien before we hit it with radiation or not? I don't know. But it had some, like, cool Tree of Life aesthetics to it, and just general. Even in a B-movie, it's beautiful, so... And then it came up in Kitchen Sink the next day, and we're like, oh yeah, that's cute. But that was fun. Just didn't know if anyone else had seen it.
Dude, what was I was just looking at the fucking, that was in the Back to the Future endless thread, right?
I don't know, probably.
Probably. Okay, well.
What wasn't in that thread?
Well, I was tripping out over the fucking Johnny B. Good thing, because like, I saw John Lennon perform. Well, oh fuck, where did I write it down at? Oh, I'm looking in the wrong place. I got my Facebook open. I was trying to. Okay, so what the fuck was it? Okay, I lost it, man. I gotta look something up. I can't retain everything. I can't hug all the cats. That would be crazy.
Jesus Christ, David. Come on.
I'm trying, dude. I gotta look up something.
All right.
You guys can talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I don't have anything to say without you.
That's so far from true.
Alan, are you still here? Oh, okay.
I'm still here.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me? I just dropped in. I'm just looking at A Knight's Tale IMDb quotes, and that's where it says, "Are you a woman or a blacksmith?" And she responds, "Sometimes I'm both."
Mm-hmm.
Right, the alchemist, mm-hmm. the metal worker.
Right, and so the rest is women's work and child's play. That's the whole thing. And then she's the one that ends up actually making his plate. So she gives him she hooks him up.
This is what I want to do. I want to, are all three of us recording?
I'm recording, but I don't know how it's going to turn out because it keeps being weird, but...
Yeah, mine gets weird too, but mine automatically starts recording.
Yeah, I just didn't know. I don't want mine to suddenly flip out and I lose an hour and 47 minutes. So I just wanted to disconnect real quick and get it saved and then maybe get back in on the call real quick. Would that be okay? All right.
Okay.
If we're going to stay on, maybe we can all actually hang up and call back because mine's been acting weird too.
Okay, cool. Let's do it.
Kevin, is that cool with you?
Yeah.
All right, awesome.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay. You guys here?
You're here demons and poltergeists?
Oh no.
I see David.
They're like the fucking gremlins. Because Stripe had the crayon on the original poster for Gremlins, and it says, "We're here." And so in Poltergeist, they say, "They're here." In Gremlins, they say, "We're here." And then Mogwai, the band, came out with their album Mr. Beast that I play with Poltergeist and E.T. at the same time. And they have a song at the end that says, "We're no here." That was pretty good.
I just showed my kids Poltergeist for the first time.
Perfect.
Yeah, I made them watch it. It's like, because they saw the preview for the new Poltergeist. It's like, you don't know shit.
Did you spook them? Your kids aren't that old, right? You traumatized
my kids are... Right, well, one's like 7. She's held on to my arm the whole time. The other one's 12, though, so...
Still.
And she likes zombie-killing things. I think she could handle it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot. You guys watched shows together when Alan was here. She's not... She's pretty... Decent... What is it? Yeah, thank you.
So this was the thing. Okay, so somebody was talking about how Chernobyl was 6 months prior to, or 6 months after Back to the Future, right? And so they were like, oh, is it predictive to, the whole radiation thing or whatever? And I should actually, if I'm going to say that, I should actually tell you who the fuck said that. So Andrew West Griffin, I believe, he says the events in Back to the Future occur on October 25th, 1985, and into the early morning of October 26th, 1985. Exactly 6 months later, the events that went down in Chernobyl nuclear power plant occurred on April 25th, 1986, and into April 26th, 1986. I think the six-month, half-year designation is important. And so I thought that was kind of interesting, and then I started thinking about it. I was like, oh, yeah, that's very similar to the trip out I had about the seven-month thing between The Shining and the death of John Lennon, because The Shining obviously is named after Instant Karma. The Catcher in the Rye shows up with Danny Lloyd, in his first scene, and then the Here's Johnny line being the Johnny Carson reference, which was Chapman's other target, etc. And then, I was talking about fucking Pac-Man, because Pac-Man came out immediately afterwards, the very next day, right? And then it was like, oh, well, that's, running from ghosts in a maze. Very similar. Pac-Man was originally called Puck-Man, relating to the satyr, which is Pan. And then you have Danny Lloyd is like Dan, but he brings Jack into the labyrinth. So it's like Dan's labyrinth, you know what I'm saying? Dan, Pan. So it's Pan's labyrinth. Anyways, so I thought that was interesting with the seventh month thing, but that actually, Sabbath means any cycle of seven. That's literally what Sabbath means. It's not just necessarily Saturday. And that's because same idea in the I Ching that gets expressed when a movement's accomplished in six stages and the seventh brings its return. You know, seven is the
number. Does it have to relate to period of time, a cycle of time, or just any kind of cycle?
Any kind of cycle of seven. That's the thing. And so I was tripping out on that, but then I went and I just typed in Back to the Future, John Lennon, and then I got like an article that's like, go back to the future with John Lennon. Then I found Yoko Ono goes back to the future with Acorn. And then I found fucking Johnny Be Good, sung by Chuck Berry and John Lennon, like full on, like just total, Back to the Future style. And then I'm like, Johnny Be Good, here's Johnny, Dan, Pan, Danny Lloyd, Christopher Lloyd, the Christ Bearer, Pan, the Mount Hermon, where Christ has his transfiguration, that actual mountain in real life at that time was all for Pan worship. They had a giant Pan statue there and all this stuff. Hermon is named after Hermes. And then I find then that Chuck Berry actually played in 1986 with Julian Lennon, Johnny Be Good. And so there, you know, and I thought that was weird. And so then Patrick was pointing out that Full Circle was also released in the U.S. on 9/11. Not just that. I mean, I'm sure you guys are familiar. It was opened initially like in Spain on 9/11 one year, and then like went around the world in like a circle, and then like ended in New York, right? Or yeah, I think in New York on 9/11, 1970 or 1980. I can't remember, whatever the fuck. The point being is that it started showing on 9/11 and ended showing on another 9/11, which the probability of that are really interesting. The fact that it's called Full Circle and The Haunting of Julia. Julia was the name of John Lennon's mother. Why the song Julia that occurred, like if you watch with Rosemary's Baby, occurs during the impregnation and all this kind of weird shit. So, yeah, it just, you know, I thought you might find that interesting.
Full Circle is 1977.
That's when they started, and then it was like 3 years or something before they stopped distributing it around the world. It showed in different places around the world for like a lengthy time. If you go to IMDb and you just look up the release date,
you are
show you. IMDb, IM42.
Okay, yeah, 1981 in New York.
I see, so that's the thing. And then it corresponds to over the time of when the whole thing played out. It's pretty ridiculous, man. She chokes on a fucking green apple. Apple Records. Like, I mean, for me, it's, you know, I don't know if you guys ever saw that sink that I used to have up for a while.
The Haunting of Julia Roberts.
The Haunting of Julia Roberts.
Jesus.
The Haunting of Julia Robin Williams.
Hey, if I can, I think it's a good time. I synced up that weird prophetic scene from Hook.
Yeah, please.
Just share my screen here. Let's see. How do you share your screen? Is it through the attachment?
I don't know about that technology. I'm very old fashioned.
God.
Alan seemed to do something before.
I have an option. There's a plus sign button. It says add participants, send files, and more. And
share screens. Take pictures, send files. It's like at the bottom of your thing, there's a camera, a microphone, a plus. You hit the plus, and then you can share screens. Oh, you've started doing it. It takes a minute.
It takes a village.
I see.
You guys seeing Hook?
Yeah, it's pixelated, but I can see it.
All right, I'll give it a shot here.
Julia Roberts on Robin Williams' chest. Feet print.
Yeah, he's got a footprint.
She's going to pick him up by his tie as a noose, and he's going to say, am I dying? It's pretty intense.
Oh, that's fucked up.
This is what you just heard with that. Rodney Asher, the woman not sitting on the chest, the night
sleep paralysis.
Yeah, it's the fucking, I have that.
But she's a butterfly, straight up.
You guys she's sitting sleep paralysis? I have that. My breathing becomes like super fucking refined, and I feel like I can just breathe like indefinitely, and it's crazy. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, I have sleep paralysis. You should read the listen to the Rodney Asher
podcast. Come on, that bow tie is a butterfly.
I've read a ton of stuff on sleep paralysis.
She's like, I'm dying. Look, there's my house way down there.
Come on, that bow tie is a butterfly.
The bow tie is a butterfly as well. Bingo. That's fucked.
Kevin, didn't you do something with the rainbow tie? Bow tie?
Rainbow tie,
but I like that.
Rainbow suspenders is more from India, and now he's got the bow tie, rainbow tie.
Right, the golden bow tie.
And he's Rainbow Randolph.
Yeah, I called him a long time ago. I think I called him the Rainbow Serpent or something like that. Because that's, I mean, with the Mork and Mindy stuff and the rainbow,
that was before
any of this stuff.
You have the what looks like the Orphic egg being referenced in Mork and Mindy when he travels in this egg. But then if you read the actual, like, the writings of Kenneth Grant, you know, who was the head of the OTO for quite a while, you know, his whole thing with Iowa centers around the egg and traveling in an egg. You know, you probably are familiar with that, right, Kevin? Pretty obscure, but...
kind of cut out a little. What was that exactly?
Well, I was just talking about how Kenneth Grant, as head of the OTO, would often talk in his talk of LOM is all around the egg. I said Iowa's, I think, but I meant LOM.
That's why he got ostracized, right?
In the egg. Is that? I don't know.
Yeah, they were all upset that he was bringing in an alien aesthetic to the angelic contact experience.
He formed the Typhonian OTO, which was not officially recognized by the OTO, you know. So
before that, was he the head of the OTO and they kind of ostracized him or whatever, or what?
He was another person who made I'm not any kind of trustable authority on the particulars, but from what I understand, he claimed to be the outer head of the order after Crowley's passing, based on, I believe, like a written document, you know, transferring authority to him, but that document was like never produced, and Grant also, I think, had like a bit of a, like a couple of instances where he couldn't produce like the proofs of his like standing grades within the AA or the OTO or anything like that, so. Correctly, like I said, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure he made that claim, but it was never officially true, you know.
Well, no one can prove your grade in the AA. That's the thing about the AA. It's not the worldly thing. No one's.
But yeah, the attainments are like are proved in works, you know. So like the you know, the work of like Adeptus Minor. Or even like, I guess we could say like the work of an adeptus exemptus is to produce a whole soul of magic or philosophy that you know, aids humanity's evolution to some degree. So you know, you could say that Crowley has his proof of those grades. Like that's the only external proof is in accomplishments like that. You know. Like, that's why there's a lot of people who claim to be masters of the temple or eighth degrees or ninth degrees or ipsissimus and all this stuff. But, you know, none of them have produced the Adeptus Exemptus tome, mm-hmm. which would be the proof of their grade or, you know, adepthood in general. It's like that it's rarely provable by a lot of occultists because that's pretty high for that, you know. So, but yeah, so there's always those like the kind of occult scene bickering about
who's to be
right. Yeah, who's to be taken seriously about any matter, you know, and things like that. But you know, interesting thing about Grant, even when we were talking about water and he was another person who did like a lot of cool work with. Synthesizing certain Jungian concepts and things into magic, and particularly he he produced this tarot deck in this concept called the Tunnels of Set, which were these it's kind of like the cliffotic or the shadow side of the tarot, but with that comes the ability to scry the 22 paths or the 22 spirits of the tarot trumps in the cliffotic sense, you know. So interestingly enough, he believed that the spirits of the cliffotic tarot and what he called the night side of the tree, he believed that those spirits like lived in the water, like they were these you could say like archetypes or spirits that were kind of like produced and sustained in the earth's water, and that's something that he pointed out. So it was interesting that earlier we were talking about and there's always that interesting, I think, the collective unconscious as symbolized by water and an ocean. And then that goes back to Babylon and the red lady that we were discussing, because that like ocean is like the symbol of like the greater like ocean existence or the universe, or like, you know, Bina and the tree of life. So I guess there's a certain consistency with the water symbolism in some of our discussions tonight, you know. But
Dark Water, Jennifer Connelly walking to the end of a pier on like every fucking movie. I just got a flash. Was that from you, Will?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we were talking about earlier with Dark City. She's in Dark Water. She's in what is it? It's weird because in Dark City, she's in the movie theater. She's like a ticket taker in a movie theater. And if you look above what she is, it says the Book of Dreams while she's asleep. But she's also in what's that movie about the drugs or whatever, about the narcotics?
Requiem for a Dream.
Requiem for a Dream, which is another, it's this whole Sleeping Beauty thing where she is recognized as like the sleeping potential of Total Recall. Do you get what I mean? And Dark Water is basically the same thing. She's in this movie called Dark City. She's in this movie called Dark Water.
And she's in House of Sand and Fog, which is a very dark movie that she also walks to the end of the pier on. How many movies did she walk to the end of the pier on? I think it's 4 or 5.
It's something crazy. No, I only thought it was 2. I thought it was...
No.
There's just water everywhere. I mean,
no,
she's even in...
It's at the end of Wrecking for a Dream. It's in Sand and Fog.
She's even
in
Noah.
I know it's in 3.
She's even in fucking Noah. I mean, she's in Noah where she's Noah's wife and the world is, you know, drowned in a deluge of water. Memory.
Right.
I know I've mentioned this before, but in Dark City, the man's name is Murdoch. His last name is Murdoch. Mur is... French.
Matt Daredevil?
Well, right. Same last name, exactly. Like Daredevil, it's like the water dock. It's like the pier over the water that she's standing on.
She has this weird relationship with Kate Winslet, too. And there's this whole thing with, you know, Kate Winslet and water as well. And then there's this Leonardo DiCaprio thing. They touch. There's the inner circles of people who have the same themes. They like trade off, and actually in the movie, I actually can't remember what it is. I think it is The Holiday or something like that, or The Vacation with Kate Winslet. And Kate Winslet's like lover in that movie is the same guy who's in Dark City. So it's just like that they keep trading off with these characters and themes in this really weird way. If you include like Titanic, Blood Diamond. And all
the Blood Diamond and the Jewel of the Ocean or whatever, what was it?
The sea. Right.
The Heart of the Ocean. So you got, yeah.
And it's weird because that the Heart of the Ocean is owned by King Louis the 13th or whatever, which Leonardo DiCaprio actually plays in The Man in the Iron Mask.
Oh, I didn't know that one. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It's fucked
that
up.
That movie is ridiculous where he... I mean, so, like, they beat you to the head with it. They have, because he's the Sun King, but then, like, they're constantly where he's got the twin brother, and he's always seen with the moon, and the other brother's always seen with the sun.
Oh, they just go to town on it.
They do it hardcore. Like, once you realize it, it's like, oh, geez, this doesn't stop.
Right, it's insane. And then there's like Shutter Island, where Leonardo DiCaprio, like the first thing you see is him looking at the water, and he's like, "Man, that's a lot of water."
Right.
Okay. Do you guys remember the cartoon Pirates of Dark Water?
Yep.
Yeah, I thought I was the only one who remembered
that. No, I don't know.
That's why I dropped that in the chat, and then you guys said to me, apparently there's a dark. Is Jennifer Connelly in a movie called Dark Water?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, because I was thinking Pirates of Dark Water, which apparently. Alien world is called Mer, like I was just saying, Murda. That's the name of the dark water planet. And there's a monkey bird, which is like Wizard of Oz, right, obviously. But the monkey bird was voiced by Roddy McDowall, who was, of course, from Planet of the Apes.
And Communion. He was the guy who read the book Communion on the book tape of Whitley Strieber's.
So, okay, just really, really quickly, some basic things. Like, you know, you got Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. There's a drawing of Kate Winslet on the boat with the skeletons at sea. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
You know, before? Okay, so, like, of the images that are in that movie that are in his drawing book, there's that, and then there's the one where they're laying on the ice and they're looking up at the stars, and she says, tell me what constellations you see. Alan has pointed out that when he says, oh, I see a swoop it across, and he's saying, well, that's representative of Sirius.
Right.
But then if you look at that piece of paper that they drew that on, there's three hearts that are together. You guys think three of hearts, you know, three of cups, abundance would be where I would go with that. But I see this Star of David that's written there. It's drawn on the picture right there with them. You're like, oh, there's a little Star of David there. Well, isn't it funny that that's a symbol, as Jay Kotza loves to point out, the green Star of David is the heart chakra. You know, he has this whole heart chakra association. But then you have, like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, obviously, in the beach and stuff. But you have the film Titanic centers around the heart of the ocean. I find it really interesting that, like, they wake up in the dream in a bed by the ocean, you know. Very strange. So fucking Kirsten Dunst, she's Mary, right, in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And then Kirsten Dunst's best friend in Marie Antoinette is Rose. I had this whole, I don't know, there's more things I could go into, but I'm getting pretty tangential. But you know, that the significant thing is that fucking Rosemary is Marinus of the sea. That's the meaning of Rosemary. And so, you know, Mary, is it Middle English form of the French Marie, derived from the name Maria, and ultimately from the Hebrew name, uncertain origin, Miriam. That's
it. Isn't there some myrrh connection in the Last Unicorn or whatever also?
Well, the thing with the Last Unicorn is that all the unicorns are held in prison in the foam of the sea. So right. Rosemary literally means
memory.
Dew of the sea. I mean, drop of the sea is the meaning of Mary.
If you carry that over to the whole Rosemary's thing, I mean, this whole devil baby concept and what we're going through right now with the Year of the Goat has to do with, like, I mean, it's the Ion of Horus or whatever, but it's this whole connection with Rosemary being like the Sleeping Beauty. Do you know what I mean? This isn't a dream. This is really happening. She's the potential, the unlocked potential of, like, total recall passed down to the new child, the
right.
Star baby.
Well, it's very important to know exactly. That's the two things, is that you have 2001: A Space Odyssey and Rosemary's Baby are absolutely linked in the way that they're both about producing this magical child. One is a star child, it's a savior. You have the Messiah returning. The other one, you have the Antichrist. And it's a conspiracy to create the Antichrist that she ends up accepting. The whole thing is like, I guess I'll just submit and embrace whatever this is.
This whole Jack Black thing that's going on, because the whole Beauty and the Beast concept of the two pillars being joined, right, is the pathway is the Beauty and the Beast card, or the Strength card, or Oz, right?
Mm-hmm.
we've gone through this like 100 times before. I don't think that we really need to like voice it anymore. But
the most important part of that whole deal for me is that that pathway of strength is what connects Chesed and Gevura. And so you have the mercy coming to severity. And so to have charge of that or whatever is a huge, I mean, that's 77 Oz, is that link between those specific spherot, which connects the two pillars at the top or the abyss.
The connecting of the right brain and the left brain.
Right.
And also, just to chime in, it's interesting, there is a good sermon that my buddy from the Gnostic Church did on the symbolism of Babylon and the Beast. And in that sermon, he talks a little bit about how the goddess is like ultimate of the knot. You know, like the unmanifest, and which would be like Ein Sof and Ein, you know, the veils of nothingness that are what even Kepler is a conceptual reflection of, you know?
Sure.
So that the goddess of Babylon kind of represents that great unconscious desire of the god or the spark of creation to find itself and experience itself through love. So Kether is that initial spark of the god acting on the desire of the goddess who is not-ness to become manifestedness, you know. So all this symbolism of like the great sea and the goddess and these concepts are like almost like inherent to our kind of human interpretation of reality, because we understand like the womb primary you know state and the water of birth and you know water being feminine. So all these symbols kind of like and the way that this kind of this dance of like our human interpretation unfolds through all these films is like really like I feel like it's like seeing the universal mind dreaming about what it does, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's well, I don't know how to formulate that.
The movie as dream is interesting to me too, and the whole concept. I mean, we could go on about the Beauty and the Beast thing from here until dawn if we wanted to. But like it's particularly with Jack Black is very interesting to me because he's the movie director in King Kong, right? And you know, we can talk to ourselves blue in the face about the connotations of the Twin Towers and King Kong, the fact that he's seen with that whole 42 behind his head and Peter Jackson's King Kong, and then there's you know Andy Serkis's birthday being 420. And every rendition of King Kong, one of the main actors' birthdays, has been on 420 in the connotation of the King Kong being the beast.
Wanda's birthday too, I just saw on Jacob's video.
What's that?
That's isn't it the Queen's birthday as well? And isn't it fucking Crispin Glover's birthday?
Crispin, right. Where I was going though is like the connotation from movies. It's almost like the savior almost exists in the movies themselves. Jack Black also plays in this movie called Gulliver's Travels, where the beast symbolism is. I mean, they say the word beast in that movie like 42 times. Just yeah, saying. I mean, it said like every other sentence, one army's red, one army's blue, he is the beast. He's even sent to this island that has mist surrounding it. What's interesting is that he fools the Lilliputians into thinking that his life is the movies. Like he made them reenact Star Wars as the story of his life. They make him like the main star. So in King Kong, he's like the director of the movie. The King Kong is a movie within a movie. Do you know what I mean? And then he actually becomes like the movie in the Gulliver's Travels, but he's also in that movie called Be Kind, Rewind,
with Mos Def, who's in, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. There's 42 contacts.
All about magnetism.
Right, and then that's the whole thing of making movies over and over again. Both 2001 Space Odyssey and King Kong are represented in the movies that they make, but the main customer they have is Mia Farrow.
Right.
So, like, there's this thorough line of, like, the whole, the like, waking up from the dream happens in the movies.
Right. You know, the Belmer's novels is a very significant thing, and people analyze the movie from a psychoanalytical perspective a lot. If you want to see examples and evidence of that, there's Life Against Death by Norman Osborn. There's a section in it that goes on for days. It's like this long chapter on Belmer's novels from a psychoanalytical perspective in the Yahoos and the whole deal. It's very interesting.
Did you guys see I dropped to the chat here using the whole dream, this is no dream, using all this stuff, and using Rosemary's Baby, the Christ figure, the Savior, and the dream. Did you see this? I dropped in the new poster for the walk, the Twin Tower poster.
Every dream begins with a still step.
And look at it. Look, the tightrope and the pole, it's like a crucifixion. It's clearly.
It's a cross.
Oh,
it's Axis Monday, straight up. Axis Monday, straight up.
Right.
The Kabbalah, the thing in the middle of the Kaaba stone thing that's in the middle of the tower is right there in the middle of the picture, isn't it?
Correct.
Yes. Yes.
It's the sort of eye in the pyramid in this picture.
Actually. And of course, in Synchmas, the whole Synchmas, the Synchmas thing
that
Jay did. What was that again?
Do you see the eye in the pyramid? Look at this poster.
Oh, shit.
The Abosphere is the eye.
Right.
Totally. It's perfect. Because the shadow makes it that way. That's crazy.
That's Joseph Gordon Levitt from. Loopers.
Who is
the main character in the wall?
I also dropped.
You've seen a movie on the documentary? You've seen the documentary, right? What this is based on? Is really happening?
Right. Yeah.
This guy
just
walked across. I mean, I haven't seen the whole thing. I watched parts of it at one point. But yeah, Man on a Wire, I think, is what it's called. But yeah, it's actually happened. This fucker walked across the towers. It's totally terrifying to me. But congratulations to you. I mean, my legs are shaking just thinking about it. Feeling anxiety right now looking at this image.
Did you see the Pan movie I dropped here?
I did see that, and I just had a whole kind of excitement around that. Interesting. What else?
I had no idea about this movie, but. That's just messed up. Wow, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Year of the Goat, brothers.
Yeah.
The Blue Devils won the NCAA championship. Daredevil's coming out. It's crazy.
Kevin, do you want to drop some goatee knowledge on us?
Goatee knowledge. Trying to think. I mean, I was thinking on 420 how there's some just interesting goat connections. How like so Capricorn is ruled by Saturn, you know, and Capricorn is the goat, and metal music is associated with like. The devil and Saturn and Satan and stuff and the you know the devil and gesture and so I'm losing my train of thought. There's like a interesting flow of symbolism. Oh, so heavy metal being like Saturn, like lead, you know, and the way that heavy metal attracts the symbolism of the goat. And I'm stoned, so I lost the 420 goat connection that I came across.
I was like, practicing. I was like, while you were talking, I was like, I feel like I should smoke a bowl. And then I was like, well, I was like, I don't know if I'll be able to pay attention to the rest of the conversation. So, you know what I think is interesting? You mentioned the metal and the goat connection. There's always this sort of, like, I have this vision in my mind. Whenever I think goat, there's always that sort of image of the goat eating the tin can.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And it's what in is My Pet tin? Goat. He eats cans and caps, yeah.
Right. What is tin?
It's Jupiter, it's as Jupiter. We all know, according
right.
to so Crowley 777.
In the mythology, Saturn eats Jupiter, right?
It's true, which is lead. So
he
lead,
eats his child. He eats
lead
his children.
Eats tin.
Right, exactly. So I'm saying when you see the goat eating the tin can, it's Saturn eating Jupiter.
That's kind of cool. Weird.
That's interesting too, because that's the there's that recurring connection between, you know, Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, and how David Bowman, you know, goes beyond Jupiter, and
so does David Bowman with
the Stargate. That yeah, there's the whole like Jupiter Saturn connection. In Twin Peaks as well, like the gate to the Black Lodge opens when Jupiter and Saturn align.
Oh, really? Is that right? I haven't seen it in so long. I need to rewatch that shit. That's what happens. Saturn and Jupiter align, and that's what opens up the fucking gate.
Yeah, totally. There's some really. I've got like a list of these hypnosis things I'm going to be getting into, and I'm going to do a Twin Peaks one. So I've got like a pretty interesting. Little flow about that, like it connects with some of the stuff with Mars we were talking about tonight too, but I don't want to go too heavy into it right now.
Dude, I came across something a while ago about Jupiter conjunctions, and holy fuck, dude, there was like I gotta find it. It's on my blog somewhere. I'll look it up, but it was like these different events that took place during the different Jupiter conjunctions, and it was like every one was super significant. It was a major sync thing that I found at one point. It totally tripped me out. Yeah, I'll look it up.
Cool.
It was funny. I was relating it. There was something there that was like relating to the dark crystal when single shines the triple sun, behold the two made one or whatever. And if you look at it, it looks like fucking Jupiter, like totally, you know, the planet that's when the alignment happens, you know, the other planet. And I was always relating to the dark crystal, like you're on the other side of Jupiter or something. Like this is another planet that we don't get to see, like Melancholia or whatever. That's like, you know, somewhere over on
the like dark side of the moon, dark side of Jupiter.
Yeah, kind of deal, right. Exactly.
Between the blue you once knew, floating down. Thank you for listening to this broadcast from the SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other SyncBook Radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.